Welcome to the Marketing Commute, a podcast that explores the roads taken and the lessons learned for the best and brightest in marketing today. I'm Mike Boyd, and joining me on the commute this time are Andrew Baxter, Senior Advisor at KPMG Australia.
Hi, Mike.
Professor Vince Mitchell, Professor of Marketing at the University of Sydney Business School.
Hi, Mike.
And Carmen Becker, Partner at KPMG Australia and leader of their CMO advisory practice.
Hi, Mike.
In this episode of the Marketing Commute, we're joined by Benita Durant. Benita has had a hugely successful career in fashion merchandising and product development. Based in Paris, Benita is currently the VP of Global Product Direction for fashion giant Lacoste, and before this worked for other global labels including Stella McCartney, Gucci, Lavant and Prada. And we'll also get the latest thoughts and perspectives on marketing trends in Mitchell's Marketing Minute. All right, let's go. So team, what's caught our eye this week?
For me, there's been so many brands that have been acting really authentically around coronavirus and really pitching in to help. And the, you know, one of the latest ones was Lacoste, you know, in terms of having a whole bunch of their staff volunteering to make washable and reusable masks up until the 30th of April, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, for me, I think it's a you know, the growth in online shopping is something we just can't ignore. Obviously, during the crisis, it's, and you know, particularly with a lot of countries being being completely isolated, it's obviously driving a huge amount of growth in that area. But I think also what's interesting is it's also driving a lot of innovation. I'm seeing lots of new things, particularly in to do with things like checkout and, you know, tracking and so forth of parcels that are they're starting to, you know, come along faster than they probably would have.
Yeah, and I've seen something interesting that's a little bit of fun is the face mask. I mean, who would have thought this sort of medical piece of protection equipment required for our health workers has now become a bit of a fashion statement? We're seeing some of the big fashion brands get behind developing a face mask and selling it and creating an actual desirable product. And it's amazing the power of creativity to bring a very what I call sort of clinical and industrial product and bringing that to create a fashion statement. And when you look online, we're seeing a lot of people showing how to home make a mask out of old T-shirts or gorgeous fabric, whatever you've got. And we're also seeing the masks for pets. So isn't it amazing how fashion can turn something so practical into something so wonderful?
And thankfully, it's the French doing it. I mean, what a wonderful way to do it.
Yeah.
I think fashion's always played a brilliant role in tough times and downturns. They have got that ability to dial up, new trends like this or color. I mean, I was all, you know, when I've been lucky enough to work on some fashion brands over the year, it was always in those tough times that all of a sudden the colorful fashion came out. It was actually in the really exciting times when the world was going well that, you know, things went back to the more basics of blacks and whites and et cetera. So I just think fashion and a lot of artists, you know, play a big role in trying to bring us back out of these tough times.
Yeah, and I think linking that back to online shopping, I'm seeing the practicality coming out in online shopping. You know, there is a need. People don't want to have to go to the supermarket. So if they can get a slot, they are trying out home delivery. You know, and some of the brands are making that a lot easier than it used to be. So, for example, one of the retailers is just doing a family box for four for a week of food, basically. So here you go. Here's the box. Just press yes, I accept box. You don't really know what's in it. It's a bit of a mystery box. But when it arrives, I tested it. I was very happy. You know, it's so much easier. It took me about 5 minutes rather than the usual hour to do the online shop. So I think brands are doing so well in making things not only practical but also beautiful in a time when we need it.
And it's also, I think, back on that online shopping piece, it's drawing a lot of attention to the challenges and the friction points. And the nice thing is that a lot of those friction points now are getting addressed, whereas, you know, in the past it would have been on a laundry list of priorities. Now it's like, right, quick, what can reduce the friction for our customers as quickly as possible, because we need to make sure that things are easy and fast.
Oh, there's that funny meme going around that said, what drove your digital transformation? You know, was it your CEO? Was it your budgets? Was it coronavirus? So
it's so true. Fast track things.
Needs must.
Yes.
And I think those that have moved quickly, and I did note that in China, Nike moved very quickly to push their marketing toward their online stores, and through their sort of 6 to 8 weeks of you know, lockdown, Nike online sales were up 30% at a time when obviously 75% of their stores were actually shut. So I think you know, there's some of the learnings that can be had if you move quite quickly. get rid of those friction points that you talked about, Mike, you can come out the other side of this very, very, very well with consumers' trends and behaviours having changed, being more used to buying online.
Our guest this week has worked in some of the world's largest fashion brands in France, the UK and Asia Pacific. Benita Durand is now the VP of Global Product Direction for Lacoste, but I first met her when we were both studying marketing together at Monash many years ago. Benita has since worked as the General Merchandising Manager for Women's Shoes for global fashion powerhouse Prada before moving on to be the Director of Merchandising and Visual Merchandising for Gucci. More recently, Benita was the Worldwide Merchandising Director for UK fashion brand Stella McCartney and just under a year ago moved to her current role at Lacoste. It's been an amazing journey from studying marketing at Monash to incredible global roles in some of the world's biggest fashion brands, and we're looking forward to hearing all about it. Benita, welcome to the Marketing Commute.
Thank you very much.
Now, as we just said, it's been a long road from a marketing student in Melbourne to global roles in Paris and the UK. What got you into marketing to start with, and more specifically now into the fashion marketing and then merchandising?
I think I was drawn to marketing because all that way back then, marketing was a new field. It was a new field for us. But for me, it felt it was the most creative side of business. I kind of calculated. I did start medicine. I thought, that's not where I want to spend my life. And I thought that business could be quite complete because it affected so many different industries. And I was very happy to choose marketing because it felt more creative than something that was perhaps more dry. And I thought to be challenged as we're going to work for a long time, it was the way to go. And moving to fashion was quite natural for me as I have a strong passion for fashion and, again, the creative element. So I kind of navigated my way through with a change with an MBA halfway through my career, specialized in luxury to get into where I wanted to be. After a good few years, I was working in marketing in cosmetics from L'Oreal, Unilever, Revlon. And as I felt it was a great journey, it was quite corporate, highly marketing in terms of marketing strategy, product, communication. And as I went up, I felt less challenged, strangely enough, because I felt it was more about building teams. But it became more process-driven for me, at least my perspective. And I really want to be challenged, again, in the creative aspect. And this MBA, I was already living and working in Paris. So this MBA at Essex specializes in luxury, but every part of the industry, from wine to watches, not just fashion. So you have all the soft skills. Met some very interesting people, and that's one tip I give to many people trying to enter the industry, is build your network at all levels. And I chose that MBA at a time when there's so many MBAs out there to be able to build the soft skills and get my foot into the industry, because I had a strong background in marketing anyway. The hard skills were there, but I wanted to learn so much more about what goes on behind it. And from that, I chose to a retail job with a creator who has so much integrity and so inspiring. So rather than join a large company in fashion, I chose a tiny little one that didn't even, it had less than 10 people. So I could put everything I learned into the MBA into place, which is more of an entrepreneurial role. We grew very quickly, and I've taken those skills all the way along. Now, full circle, coming to a company as big as Lacoste, which is one of the biggest brands, I certainly, apart from Gucci, I haven't had so much business in my responsibility before. And it's being able to take the skills of keeping the integrity of building a brand, linking the collection to the brand, but always being in touch with the client is very important. So I think product strategy, this element of marketing, is something which I've been able to evolve and keep my passion, because goodness knows we work very hard. So the passion's very important, especially when you lead big teams. For me, it's something which makes me tick and helps me to motivate and inspire generations of people who really want to move forward as well. So,
what have you discovered in the difference between your journey on working for companies like Unilever and L'Oreal versus the more luxury high-end companies? What do marketers have to do differently, and what do they need to think about?
I don't think we can cut corners in luxury, because if we're asking clients, and even more so in 2020 as Gen Z is moving through and influencing the business so much more, influencing the size of the business, but influencing what their parents buy, we need to be more accountable. And I think it's all coming together in fashion right now. I went through years where I struggled. I felt it was really corporate, and it didn't have, my career didn't have much purpose because it seems as though why is just fashion. We used to laugh about it often when crises, which were ridiculous on the outside, but we'll be thinking, oh, we're only selling fashion, or we're not surgeons. But now it's coming together because sustainability is something which concerns us all. There's big wake-up calls in 2020, which could have happened earlier. Fashion is the second most polluting industry in the world. So we are all, in my role, for example, with product and product strategy and any impact, we have to be conscious of that and adapt as much as we can, as soon as we can, either in transparency, in communication, in marketing, in how we develop our products, and taking on the challenge, because it can't be done overnight for big companies. Small DTC companies can address that very quickly, but larger companies have much more responsibility to be able to get there. So it's becoming much more complex, and it's a big wake-up call. So I think it's, for me, it's it feels more meaningful, which is very important.
I think it's so important as marketers always to stay on top of what trends are like that, and that's clearly, you know, the whole sustainability piece is incredibly important to so many brands going forward. Just how do you stay on top of trends like that in general? I mean, what, you know, how do you and the team go about that, either globally or in France?
We have to be on top of that, and thanks to more the social media and all the marketing tools that we have, we can use that to back some of our decisions. But we must actually have a strong intuition, test it with data, but it's finding that balance. And our job as well, especially in my field, is to influence the creative director, who can also have an idea that their vision for the brand is something, but we know the brand is there for a business reason as well. And this is what my profession is really responsible for making sure that the brand's in constant evolution, with being aligned to brand values and being aligned to clients to be on top. And being on top of trends could be small fashion trends, from color to fabrics to trouser lengths to weights, wapes that nips or tarts, or how we accessorize and style. It just goes into everything. So it's a lot of fun as well. So we take influence from everywhere.
Benita, just talking about data and talking about the, you know, the younger generation, they're not that young. E-commerce has obviously changed significantly the way that consumers interact with brands, and particularly obviously the fashion industry. What's that change been like from your side of the fence?
We've had to be more precise in developing our product portfolios. It becomes clear, because once you've actually done a season or two and it's online, people who may have believed in a project or a product in a forfeit, it makes, sometimes can make no sense because it overlaps and it's like excessive consumption. A trend in fashion as well is conscious consumption. I think e-commerce has also helped us wake up on what is necessary, what's purposeful. And another trend which has happened in fashion is the smaller DTC brands, which have a quicker time to market, which will make consumers wait on waiting lists, which is something e-commerce has helped a lot as well. Before, when it's in stores and pure store-driven, boutique-driven, wholesale or retail, it was very difficult to manage people's waiting lists, because they come to a store, they need it. But it's much easier to manage on e-commerce, because the communication with the client's more transparent. So it's actually been a big shake-up as well for fashion, but in the right way. It's made us be more agile, and it's also given us more competitive information so much more quickly. Years ago, you know, we find it immediately. You could do a product audit if we have a particular idea on a bathing suit, for example, and we could actually just get out there with all the key competition and see what's in the market. So audits can be done more quickly. It's a great move for us. And now that it's very difficult even to get into stores, e-commerce is something that will continue to drive. And in some businesses, some brands, it's up to 30% of their business. And DTC brands, it's obviously much more than that.
I heard the head of design at Mercedes-Benz talk, and he talked about luxury brands no longer having customers or consumers, but having fans or followers. And these are people that not only buy the brand, but actually be brand ambassadors in the way they wear it and the way they display it through social media and through their networks. How do you think about customers or your clients or your fans or followers?
We're building the connection with clients. We're tapping into their mindset and making sure that our product is something that they desire and they want. So it's really building communities. We know from social media, it's building communities. There's art communities that are happening that for 12-year-olds, that's what's happening. They influence fashion. So that's something that we're right on top of. And that's something which I just adore. It just keeps it all alive and together and youthful and more dynamic, rather falling into this is the product that we're going to do. We're going to do it in new color for the new season, which fashion was almost getting that way a few years ago, updating color palettes because we have and still do trend agencies that worked on trends in the future. Now all of that's changed. It's happening as we speak, and we have to be more agile to react in that way.
Bernarda, who are you watching? What are the brands that you're admiring that are doing a good job of this, and particularly with relation to that community piece that you talk about?
The brands that we look to are often smaller brands because they have trends that are really interesting and less strong powerhouses, which come from sport. I don't need to cite them, but they're pretty obvious brands who work on a big amount of categories. But as we work across the fashion silhouette as well, we need to move forward. And we also look at many luxury brands as moving forward because street trends come also from there. And there's much more of a mix. Fashion has less segmentation these days because almost 10 years ago, people start to wear things differently. We all want to do things in a personal manner. So it's not as segmented when we would look at marketing and competitive benchmarking a few years ago.
Bernarda, you've obviously had an incredible career, and one of the things we've asked a lot of our guests is around mentors. I mean, who have some of your mentors been along the way, and how have they helped you?
I think since I've been in fashion, my mentors have actually been my peers, mainly from other companies as well, because we have to navigate our way through similar situations. So I could cite many of my good friends over the years, because it's an industry that moves around a lot. But they've really come more for sideways kind of moves and how we can work forward, how we share insights on consumers together. And, of course, it's a very close industry and family fashion. So many of us know each other. All the fashion weeks, we really share a lot.
If you were putting yourself in those shoes now and you're a young marketing student aspiring, what sort of advice would you give them if they wanted to take their career in a global direction and get out there in the world and do their stuff?
To keep their curiosity. I think it's something I've seen with people I like to mentor and take along with me, even in younger people. Sometimes they just lose their curiosity. So I think if we can't keep that, you're definitely going to get bored or not be able to manage a team as well. We have to remain curious and insightful and open to new ideas. So I think that's something which I've kept with me, and I kind of hold that to Australia as well, the kind of way that we're encouraged to be open. And I would encourage anyone who wants to continue or open up into this field to keep that. We really would encourage young students to remain true to their authentic self, because there is a place. They will find mentors along the way to ask for help, keep curious, and to keep that energy going. We all need it. It keeps us going as well.
Now, we do want to ask you, the coronavirus is obviously affecting everybody, and I think just keen to understand some of the things you're thinking about as a marketer around what's going on in our planet at the moment.
It's definitely will change fashion, which has a tendency to dramatize things. I think that we always have to be together to make decisions. In fact, we can work remotely on certain matters. We will need to change our timing. We will get there with a more efficient collection, and it will force us to make decisions that we thought were essential before, but they're not. So it's a very unfortunate situation, but the way that leaders have to manage the crisis demands responsibility from us all, and it definitely will change the way that we are in fashion. Our boutiques most European boutiques have closed, so people can't access commerce, but people can still buy on e-commerce if they wish. But I think that people will reassess their consumption, and the big trend on conscious consumption about what do we need in fashion, how do we upcycle, where are we inspired, all these trends that have actually moved, emerging trends in the past few years and the past few months, they will move forward for sure and definitely work how every brand assesses their next move.
So Benita, what's the road ahead for you? What, you know, in keeping with our commuting theme, what's the future look like?
Big challenges have come up and here we go. So we've got to hang on and really take that voyage together. The planet will be in this together. Long term for me, it's been a goal to get back to Australia. My family does as well. Hopefully we'll make it back one day, but right now we'll get through what we're doing here. I guess the opportunities are very big in Europe and we hope to make it back to Australia eventually one day as well. So let's see. Very positive on that one.
Hey, one of the fun things we ask, given the commute theme, is how do you commute to work?
I walk because we came back to Paris last summer for Lacoste and after having a different quality of life elsewhere, I remember what the quality of life is like in Paris. And I, after looking at apartments, we thought, no, I'm living walking distance from work. So that really helps. And it's a lovely area. So I've got a good 20-minute walk and kids are close to school. So but it's actually, so it's a really nice commute in terms, great for podcasts, music, hear the mind, none of the French public transport, which is quite difficult. As it's a very highly developed urban city, people get public transport to work. So it's cleaner to walk, shall I say.
Yeah. It's such a lovely place to walk as well. So
yes.
Tell us your favourite song then when you're walking to work so we can put it with the podcast.
Oh, I'm loving Kanye West, Salah. It's in the latest Jesus is Lord album. That's pretty good. That gets you going for the day. Or any good Beyonce.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Benita, it's been wonderful talking to you on this episode. It's fantastic to get your sort of perspective. Fashion is an amazing industry and a sector that I don't think a lot of people appreciate the complexity of. So we really appreciate your time and we wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
So for this week's Mitchell's Marketing Minute, I've taken something from the Journal of Marketing, which has an article that talks about developing brands in a hyper-connected world. So the article claims that Nike's valuation increased by approximately $30 billion between the launch of Colin Kaepernick's Dream Crazy ad and the end of 2019, and that this was largely due to the viral publicity around that Dream Crazy ad. They argue that this defies the traditional principle of branding, not to be involved in controversial issues that may potentially turn away certain customer segments, and that this helps to rewrite and forces us to potentially rethink the role of brands play in a hyper-connected world. They say that there seems to be a broadening and blurring of brand boundaries, and the traditional roles of brands, of being a brand signal of quality or as mental cues, are different in a hyper-connected world. And that brands in that world are more containers of socially constructed meaning, architects of value networks, catalysts of communities, arbiters of controversy, and stewards of data privacy, amongst other roles that they can play. So they say one implication of hyper-connectivity for brand research is that brands will need to focus more on consumers and firms as part of networks rather than as their role of focusing on individual buyers or managers of brands, and that brands should go beyond their role as cultural symbols and examine themselves as agents of social change. So to fulfill this broader mission and purpose, the firm will be asked to address broader issues, including societal responsibility, sustainability, human resource practices that go far beyond your traditional profit maximization. So marketing commuters, do you agree hyperconnectivity is an opportunity for brands to broaden their remit in society?
I certainly think it is. And it is interesting as the world of marketing continues to evolve. I mean, some parts of what you just said there, Vince, you know, will stay true for brands. I mean, I think the Colin Kaepernick example is about relevance and authenticity. And you know, that's sort of age-old brand principles. But I think as we go forward, and particularly in a post-COVID environment, businesses and brands that understand that it isn't just about profitability, it's also about your customers and your employees and the community within which you operate, is a really important thing for them to understand.
And what I love about this as well is it's saying that it's no longer about the customer. Your customers need to be fans and followers. And I've always thought that's a really interesting way to start thinking about your customers, not just an end taker of your product or buyer of your product, but someone that actually is an interim user that someone can use it and then share again. So it's a really interesting concept and I think a great one for brands to be thinking about.
And I think from the hyperconnectivity point of view, just picking up on what Andrew was saying a minute ago, that I think for certain brands, and I think particularly ones in hospitality, travel, tourism, you know, all those things where there's a human-to-human element, I think that hyperconnectivity is going to provide a great way to unlock new engagement methodologies between people and between customers and brands where there is that human element. And I think that's going to be really significant with greater adoption of hyperconnectivity, and brands will learn and evolve as a result. Well, that's it for this episode of The Marketing Commute. Thanks to our guests, Benita Durand from Lacoste, to Andrew Baxter and Carmen Becker from KPMG, and to Professor Vince Mitchell from the University of Sydney Business School. To our producers, Boyd Wing and Billy Gleason, the studios here at the University of Sydney Business School, and to KPMG's Customer Brand and Marketing Advisory Team. You can find The Marketing Commute on all good podcast networks, and you can find more detailed show notes, links to each episode, and find out more information about our guests and presenters at the website themarketingcommute.com. I'm Mike Boyd. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the next stop on The Marketing Commute.
You have reached your destination.